behavior at the CSR.
Thank you very much. I'm going to talk about how study sections are organized and how they operate. Anita's given you a nice introduction in terms of how applications fit into the Center for Scientific Review. And so now you're ready for a little bit more specific information having to do with study section organization. Study sections are chartered in that they've been they've gone through an approval process with the Congress. There are approximately 200 and a little over 200 chartered study sections with widely varying subject matter. Special emphasis panels, on the other hand, are groups, review groups that are put together for a specific purpose. Often they're put together for RFAs or other sorts of one-time reviews. And they're also put together to handle member conflicts. If a person who is on a study section, who is a member of a study section, submits an application, they're obviously in conflict. They can't have their application reviewed by that study section. So we have to put together a special panel for those kinds of reviews. Regular study sections, which are the majority of you will be submitting to regular study sections, at least in the beginning. They meet three times a year. NIH is organized on a kind of a trimester system. Each study section is managed by an SRA, typically a person with a PhD or in some cases an MD or other doctoral degree who has specialization in the subject matter that is covered by the study section. Sometimes you find an SRA who does not have specialization in a particular subject matter, but they learn very quickly, we hope. Anita mentioned the number of typical members on a study section. They have four-year terms, and one person serves as a chair who kind of guides the review process at the study section meeting. A chair is typically appointed for a two-year term. The division of labor between the SRA and the chair is important. The SRA is the legally responsible official who makes sure that NIH and CSR procedures and policies are followed, whereas the chair is one of the members of the study section and actually manages the logistics of the meeting. If we have on the average 20 to 24 members in a study section, that means that there's not enough personnel or even expertise to cover what is to be reviewed in the meeting. Many study sections handle a subject matter that is very, very broad. For example, I just got through managing the PRDP, which is a behavioral medicine study section focusing on primary interventions and prevention. And that study section reviews for usually about 12 NIH institutes. That is, the applications have been assigned to distributed among 12 different institutes. And so in our meeting last week, we had something like 34 people at the meeting and another 16 people on the phone who contributed to the review process. and that's with 24 members. So you can see that in the broader study sections, you have nearly double the number of reviewers. So we do rely a lot on temporary members. Okay. I've divided this into pre-meeting, meeting, and post-meeting phases. In the pre-meeting review process, this is when the SRA has received the applications that he or she will be reviewing in the study section. The SRA looks over the study sections for subject matter, weeds out those where there might be a conflict of interest with one of the members to go to a special emphasis panel. And with the remaining applications, then he or she must assign reviewers to each application. Now, one thing that's important to recognize is that no member of a study section can cover all of the subject matter contained in the typical application. Rather, it's a division of labor, and typically we have three reviewers assigned to each application. Sometimes we may need more if it's really complex. But the reviewers have to understand that they are not expected to know everything about an application. Rather, each has a field of expertise which is pertinent to the applications to which they are assigned. We obviously recognize that there are potential conflicts of interest between the members of a study section and the applications that are going to be reviewed. So, for example, a reviewer cannot review an application that comes from his or her institution. And so the members who are in conflict with an application are recused. That is, they go out in the hall and wait while the review process takes place for that particular application. We send the applications about 6 weeks prior to the meeting, in order to give the reviewers sufficient time to put them aside for several weeks often. And then a couple of weeks before the meeting, they'll pull them out and really get to work. But we do try to give them plenty of time for those of who can spread the work out over the 6 week period. And believe me, they spend an awful lot of time reviewing these applications. I would estimate anywhere from 4 to 6 hours per application. The reviewers, once they've written their critique, then they post them on an electronic website, the internet-assisted review site that NIH operates. They post their critiques electronically no later than about 4 days prior to the meeting. Sometimes we try to get them to post them even earlier, but I would say that the deadline's probably about 4 or 5 days before the meeting. This gives reviewers an opportunity to read the critiques of their colleagues, and it's particularly important for them to read the critiques from those co-assignees on a given application. This makes the review process much more effective, much more efficient, because they can come to the meeting knowing where are the similarities and differences in their assessment of an application and those of their colleagues, of their co-reviewers. And therefore, the discussion at the meeting, which is, we really have a relatively short amount of time to give to each application. On the average for R01s, it's about 15, maybe 20 minutes at the most. And for some other mechanisms, the smaller applications like fellowships, about 10 minutes. That's an average, because obviously some applications do take more time than we expect, and in other cases, less time. But the point is that by having these critiques posted ahead of time, reviewers can know what are the points to focus on. Where should they target the discussion? And this really makes for a much, much more efficient study section meeting. Okay. Whoops. At the beginning of the meeting, we identify an approximately lower half of the distribution. This means the scores that are below the median of those scores that are posted as provisional scores. Because when reviewers post their critiques on the website, they post a provisional score as well, a priority score ranging from 1.0, which is the best thing you can imagine, to 5.0, which suggests back to the drawing board. But these scores are posted, and therefore we have a distribution of average scores with at least three scores per application. We identify the lower half, and in recent months, CSR has adopted a policy of beginning at the 60th percentile. In other words, well, actually at the 40th percentile. Come down 40%, and anything below that is provisionally streamlined. That is not discussed. Now, it's important to recognize that this does not mean that the investigator doesn't get back a detailed critique. You do. It's just that it's not discussed, and therefore there's no portion of the summary statement which is labeled resume and summary of discussion, because there is no discussion. And when you think of it, this is really a very rational approach, because what it does is to conservatively identify a set of applications that are most likely not going to be funded. Therefore, the reviewers can concentrate the time they do have for discussion on those that actually have a chance. And it's conservative in that, let's take a typical institute these days, they're probably, the pay line is probably around 15%, maybe a little less even. And if you review 40% of the applications, if you go down 40% of the distribution, that means that somewhere around 25% are not going to be paid either, but they are discussed. So I think we're covering those applications which have a chance. I mentioned earlier that there are typically three reviewers per application. The conflicts are, of course, absent. The reviewers, in addition to the five criteria that Anita mentioned, they also discuss the inclusion of women, minorities, and children, the protection of human subjects, and in the case of any kind of intervention, whether or not the data safety and monitoring plan is present, and if present, whether it's adequate. The established reviewers will give their provisional priority scores, which I suppose is somewhat redundant nowadays because they're posted on the web. But in any case, they'll establish a range, let's say 1.6 to 2.0. Then the three reviewers will present their critiques. Then there'll be a discussion. And then the assigned reviewers will present their final set of provisional priority scores, and then they will vote. That is, every reviewer in the room will put in their priority score on a score sheet, and only then will budget issues be discussed. Budget matters do not affect the priority score. However, the inclusion of women, minority, and children and human subjects issues can affect the priority score. Okay? And of course, confidentiality is the fundamental basis of peer review, and reviewers know that they are not to discuss either what goes on in the room or the applications themselves or anything they read on the website with anybody else, and I mean anybody. For example, if a reviewer is reading an application and they say, well, this is not exactly what I know, but my colleague down the hall, he or she knows, so they run down the hall. Well, they can't really run down the hall. What they've got to do is contact the SRA, the person that they, from whom they need the expertise, is put on the roster, and then they can discuss the application. And this means that, of course, that the second person is also under all the rules of confidentiality and privacy that is any member of the review group. Here's just some shots of study section meetings. You can see people sitting around with obvious interest. And Anita mentioned the standard review criteria for most mechanisms: significance, approach, innovation, investigator, and environment. I've mentioned already the human subjects. The scores can range from 1.0 to 5.0, and perhaps not surprisingly, the CSR mean is around 2.5. Standing study sections, we use a percentiling procedure. So it's not just the raw score that's important, but rather how that raw score figures out in comparison with the two prior meetings. So we average scores for three meetings to get a percentile distribution. And so when you get your application, your score back, if the application is discussed, you'll not only get the raw score, let's say 155, but also how that fits in terms of a percentile. Anita mentioned also that we do give consideration to new investigators. That is people who have not had a prior R01 or the old R29, the first award, which was phased out maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Every application can be submitted three times. That is your original submission and two revisions. And of course, that includes those that are streamlined. So you're not at a disadvantage in terms of resubmitting if your application has been streamlined. All right, after the meeting, the reviewers have the opportunity to revise their written critiques based on what they heard at the meeting and on what they read prior to the meeting. This is very important, and we really emphasize that reviewers need to revise, because often they will have new views, or at least slightly revised views, based upon what they heard. And I don't know if any of you have already submitted an application and got back a summary statement, but there's nothing more frustrating than to see a relatively good score on your summary statement, but comments that are really negative and critical. So we want those applications that have good scores to have comments that support those scores. And likewise, those that don't have good scores to have comments that support those positions. The SRA for the scored applications writes a resume and summary of discussion, which is a paragraph at the beginning of the application, which really summarizes the major strengths and weaknesses, and in particular, what aspects of the application really drive the priority score. Why is it that this application got a 2.0, or another one got a 3.5, or another one got a 1.2? In other words, we want to know what the reviewers really liked or disliked about an application. The summary statements are available within approximately 30 days. We try to adhere to a 30-day deadline for all applications, and about 10 days for new investigators, as Anita mentioned. And finally, for post-meeting information, that is to get some comment on your application, on how your application did, or to get your score, although you can get your score off the NIH Commons, don't contact the SRA, but rather contact the program official. Okay? Thank you very much.